Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Northern Dispatch. We hope you all had a lovely Christmas, and we hope you enjoy this Boxing Day. This show is going to be a little different than the others we have run this year. We have each come to the table with what we believe to be the worst fake news example of the year, and we're going to give a little mockery, do a little bit of have a laugh at these terrible, you know, legacy media fake news examples. And it just goes to show you that the independent media in this country is desperately needed, even if we do say so ourselves. With that out of the way, let's get right into it. Ryan, lead us off. What story do you have?
So this is one that's fairly recent. I think many people will recall. This is where CTV News actually published a video completely misrepresenting Pierre Polyev in what he was saying. They actually clipped a couple of different audio clips together to make it look like Pierre Polyev and the Conservatives were going to be calling a motion against the dental program. And Andrew Scheer breaks down how they actually did that and what the real footage was. Take a look.
It's no wonder distrust in the media is at an all-time high. It's because Canadians are seeing more and more examples of how they twist the truth. But this one takes the cake. I've never seen anything like this. CTV News just got caught creating fake news. They were trying to promote a government talking point, and they took a clip of Pierre Polyev making a statement about the carbon tax and giving Canadians a carbon tax election, and they spliced it together to do this.
While the continuation of the plan appears safe for now, the events of the last week have raised new questions over the plan's future.
That's why we need to put forward a motion.
The Conservatives announced a non-confidence vote.
That's why it's time to put forward a motion for a carbon tax election. That's why we need to put forward a motion for a carbon tax.
The Conservatives announced a non-confidence.
Pierre never actually said that sentence. This is the lengths that they'll go to try to protect the Liberals and take your attention off of the carbon tax and all the damage it's doing to Canadians. This is what Conservatives are up against, not just the Liberals and NDP, but their friends in the media, the bought and paid for parliamentary press gallery that will do everything they can to present Liberal policies in a favorable light and make you believe things that aren't even true about the Conservatives. Next time you see a CTV News broadcast painting Conservatives in a negative light, ask yourself this one question. Did that even really happen?
So as you see, they essentially took two completely different audio clips and video clips, spliced them all together, and completely misrepresented what Pierre Polyev was going to say. Now, why would they do that? Well, it's interesting that CTV is getting some government funding. They don't like to admit it, but they are getting it. And it seems like they're taking Justin Trudeau's marching orders to spin this narrative as an attack on a political leader. Because the news is supposed to be objective. It's supposed to just report on what happened. They're not supposed to create false narratives and false statements from politicians. And for the record, we would all have the same opinion if they did it with Justin Trudeau as well. That's not what Canadians need, and this is what's contributing to the mistrust in legacy media. Now, as a result of this, they were called out almost immediately on this, and CTV issued their first tweet saying, well, we recognize this. It was mistakenly done. I don't know how this was a mistake, but here's our statement, and we unreservedly apologize.
Now, I think when they came out with that statement, oh, it was a mistake, you and I had commented that there's no way that this was a mistake. This took many steps to create. There were more than one person involved. That's not what I would classify as a mistake.
Well, and long ago, I used to work at Global News, and I used to work for another media company under Alliance Atlantis, and there was editing done all the time. Usually, there's a couple of people that are reviewing this to make sure that they're approving it before it goes to air. So somebody looked at it, somebody advised the person to do it, somebody approved it, and then somebody posted it. Now, shortly after that tweet was issued, the Conservatives were not having any of that, and Pierre Polyev and the Conservatives essentially said, we're not appearing on any other CTV broadcast unless we have a full apology and a full investigation. After their investigation, CTV ended up releasing another tweet stating they fired a couple of employees and that they were hoping that this was also essentially over and dealt with. But the issue is Canadians have completely lost trust in the mainstream media, and you still have, amazingly, you still have executives in the big legacy media news organizations wondering why, yet they have situations like this and they wonder why.
You know, in journalism school, I don't recall them ever advising us that if you want to achieve a certain political outcome, just splice a couple of different videos together and make up a completely fake quote.
There's no class on that?
No class on that. But you would actually think at this rate, with the kind of journalism we're getting from the mainstream media, that maybe there is a class on that, because this is just one example of many examples. Perhaps this is the most egregious example, but we have seen the legacy media do this time and time again. They carry water for liberals in politics. They carry water for not just their own liberals, but even for the Democrats in the United States. They do this to try to interfere in politics. They've forgotten what their jobs are, and they're so blatant about it. And the reason is because there is no diversity in the newsroom anymore. There's diversity of skin color, of gender, of sexual orientation, but there's no diversity when it comes to opinion. There are not many conservatives. I would probably argue there are next to none, actually, in most of these legacy media newsrooms, and that's clearly the problem here.
Well, and it's really sad, because you think back to, you know, the 60s and the 70s, and people that were news anchors used to be revered. They used to be admired and
trusted.
You would regard them as heroes. Like, everyone knows about the Watergate scandal. The only reason we know about the Watergate scandal is because of the news and reporting. Now, they weren't afraid of the political repercussions, or they may have been afraid, but it took courage to actually follow through and essentially post almost the biggest scandal in American history when it comes to an American president. So, you know, that's the type of reporting that democracies need in order to maintain their integrity, because otherwise, if you just have your mainstream media that is parroting the talking points of the current government, what hope do we have of even understanding, is that government acting in the best interest of the people, or is this lies? And the problem is nobody will know the difference.
We have no Peter Mansbridge these days anymore. You know, it's amazing. He was probably the last person that Canadians, A, could recognize on TV, because people would actually bother to tune in and watch him, and B, the last person that Canadians trusted on mainstream news. Someone like Peter Mansbridge. We don't have that anymore, I can tell you that. I mean, the quality stinks. Good thing we have Northern Perspective, True North, the other channels that are doing the job of the legacy media consistently fail to do. And I think
and that fraction of the cost, Harrison.
That's right. Tanya, what is your example? What story did you find?
So this is actually a series of three stories that came from the CBC. We discussed this a little while ago when it broke near the beginning of November. And this is something that the Liberals kept referring to in the House of Commons during question period in order to try to trip up the Conservatives, or maybe just make them look bad to Canadians who are watching. There was three articles. The first one was released on October the 30th with the headline, Conservative MPs Backed Communities Seeking Liberal Housing Fund Pierre Poilievre Vows to Cut. It's about the Housing Accelerator Fund, and essentially went on to say that there were five Conservative MPs who had written letters to obtain funding from this Housing Accelerator Fund, even though Pierre Poilievre wanted to cut it. So that was the gist of the first article. Then another one was released on November the 6th, titled, At Least 17 Conservative MPs Advocated for Money from a Housing Program Poilievre Vows to Cut. So again, went on to say that now there's a list of 17 Conservative MPs who dared to go behind Pierre's back and ask for money from this housing accelerator fund, even though the conservatives said this fund was a bad idea and they want to cut it. And then they followed that up a week later on November the 14th, saying conservative MPs frustrated after Polyev bans them from promoting housing fund sources. The issue with all of these three articles is that it's one of those things that it's technically true, but they forgot to tell you the other half of the story, or maybe they just forgot. The gist of it is that there's this housing accelerator fund that the government has poured billions of dollars into that municipalities are eligible to apply for funding. And as the housing minister, Sean Fraser, has told us, you don't get money for actual housing. It doesn't build actual houses. So the conservatives have decided that when they come into government, they are going to cut this funding and instead use the money from that to cover the cost of cutting the GST on new homes up to $1 million. Now, the other thing to know about this is that when MPs, it doesn't matter whether they're conservative or liberal, NDP, independent, etc., when they want to request funding for their constituents, they write a letter to the government, to the appropriate minister. In this case, it would be Sean Fraser because he's the housing minister, or he was anyways. And they request this funding. The conservatives will request this funding of a liberal government. Liberals will request this funding of a liberal government. They will request it of a conservative government. It's a normal, regular part of the MP's job to advocate for their constituents that they should receive back some of the money from the government that they have paid in taxes.
Well, and even adding to that, the article is making it seem like this whole process began with the conservative MP, which it never does. The process begins with somebody in the community that comes up with some sort of project idea, or they come up with, you know, a justification for getting this housing accelerator fund. Then they put together their business case. Then they put together their budget. Then they actually start to get their letters of support from probably the mayor, you know, and some other politicians. And then they'll actually approach their MP, regardless of the party. And then that's where this letter of support comes from. So if the MP would tell them, well, no, I'm not going to support your desire to actually get some of this money back that we've all paid into, that wouldn't go over very well. And as Tanya said, it's a normal function of every MP, regardless of government. When the conservatives take power, there's going to be liberal MPs that are going to be criticizing the conservative government for what they're spending money on, yet they're going to write these letters of support for the constituents. And this is unprecedented that the liberals are essentially going through the mail and pulling this stuff out and trying to use it as a political attack.
Yeah, that's right. So we looked very hard to try to find an example of one of these letters, and we only found one, and that was from Green Party Representative Elizabeth May, and it was from several years ago. These letters do not see the light of day. They're private. They're sent to the minister from the MPs on behalf of their communities. What the Liberals had decided to do was, as Ryan said, go looking through the mailbox and pulling out letters from conservative MPs to say, look, they criticized our program, yet they're still wanting money from it.
And the most reprehensible part of these articles, and this is where the real fake news comes into play, is that Pierre Polyev announced that he was going to cut this housing accelerator program in October of 2024. These letters were written up until February of 2024. So the narrative that they are trying to spin, that these conservative MPs wrote all these letters going behind Pierre's back, couldn't be further from the truth, because the last letter was written literally 8 months prior to Polyev making this declaration.
Well, and I think the worst part of all of it, and we were able to confirm this with two different conservative sources who asked to remain anonymous, is that because these letters were being used against them, that's when the party decided that we are no longer going to be writing letters in support of our communities, because the Liberals are being completely partisan and using this against us and against our constituents.
It's journalism by partisan press release, right? That's what we're seeing here from the CBC and from that article in the CTV. I saw the liberals saying this in question period and using it as an attack, and I didn't think much of it. I don't think the majority of Canadians think much of it and see it just as a desperate press, desperate attempt. And so much of legacy media journalism today is lazy, and it's press release journalism. You know, as you pointed out, Danya, it's not necessarily false, but it's just lacking in context, like everything else the legacy media does. And, you know, it is one thing to expect that kind of journalism from an obvious left-leaning outlet, an outlet that claims to be left-leaning. And I don't think Canadians would be so upset by it. But it's when it's from the CBC, right? It's when it comes from the Canadian taxpayer, where you see this obvious partisan hackery coming out from the CBC as if it was news. That's the part that I find so ridiculous. Like, I don't think anyone's surprised to see, you know, liberal news anymore. But it's when it's from the CBC, it's kind of rubbing salt in the wound, right? It just kind of makes it that much worse.
Yeah, because their tax dollars have gone to fund this.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, my fake news story has to have come from the CBC, right? It's just part of it. You know, we've been doing a fake news award show at True North for quite a few years now, and it always ends up with a CBC article. And I got my hands on one right at the beginning of this year, back in January, when the CBC finally decided to address the church burnings across this country. They tried to launch an investigation. And you would usually think that an investigation would result in some answers, at the very least, some effort to get to the bottom of what's going on, who was behind these church burnings, and what exactly took place here all across our country. Shocker, there were no answers in this investigation. There was no actual attempt to figure out what happened. All they did was they used the word investigation to present a video to justify and explain away these church burnings across our country, which I will say the majority of these churches that are now gone were Indigenous churches. They were churches on reserves for Indigenous Christians. And I want to just play for you some of the highlights of this video. So take a look at this. This was from the CBC back in January.
All natives were forced to go to church. Colonization, right?
We're on a journey to the scene of a crime. I'm with Clarence Louis, the longtime chief of the Osoyoos Indian Band. He's been down this road in BC's southern Okanagan many times. This is what's left of the historic St. Gregory's Catholic Church. Charred rubble, bits of scrap metal, and the cement staircase that once led to the front door.
You've walked up these steps a few times as a child?
Yeah, I didn't like it. We were forced to come in here. We were heathens, right? We were savages. We had to come in here and have the white man save our souls. That's what we were taught.
At the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Paulina Johnson has been looking into the church fires and why they're happening.
I think for many Indigenous peoples, it gives them a voice because for the longest time, Canada hasn't really actually acknowledged us.
I am Dr. Paulina Johnson, and I am the Auntie Azin.
She's an assistant professor and podcaster. Her work is a deep dive into the injustices faced by Indigenous people and how some fight back.
The church fires, they're much more than just arson. It's a greater symbolic kind of narrative of Canada.
So the first line of the video is from an Indian, the Osoyoos Indian chief, who says at the beginning, the first words, all Indian children were forced to go to church services on reserves. Again, that is just not true. There was no forcing of Indigenous children to go to churches. And then he explains away that it was colonization. Colonization, right? That's what caused this. And it just goes and goes and goes, and the demonization towards Christians who had nothing to do with the obviously bad things that happened to Indigenous children throughout our history. Yes, there were bad things that happened. I don't think anyone denies that. I don't think anyone denies or tries to downplay the role that the Catholic Church had in the residential school program. But this just these attacks on Christians today, the constant demonization that we're seeing, while you're trying to explain away a string of church burnings is outrageous. And the last clip you just saw there was a University of Alberta professor saying that the church burnings were part of a larger narrative. It wasn't just arson, she says. It was part of a larger narrative of the struggle of Indigenous people. I'm sorry, but that's just not journalism. That is trying to justify arson of a religious site, something they would never do for another religion, I would say. So that, to me, has to be one of the worst CBC examples of fake news this year.
Well, the fact that we have so many to choose from illustrates the catastrophe that is going on in Western journalism. And it's not even just Canada, it's the United States as well. And the good news is that legacy media is struggling. They're struggling with their finances. Why are they struggling with their finances? Because the public is tuning out. And why is the public tuning out? Because they don't trust them anymore. Now, the legacy media will blame YouTube. It will blame TikTok. Well, if people don't trust you, then they are going to find an alternative source to see if they can find someone that they do trust. Now, I think there's some, you know, Northern Perspective and True North being independent news outlets as some of the other ones out there. People trust them because, yeah, there's a bias there. The bias can be admitted, but we don't shy away from telling the truth, right? If the Liberals do something good, it's called out. And the intent is to prevent the spread of misinformation and disinformation. And it's sad that that's where we are right now, that that's one of the main functions of independent media, is to prevent misinformation rather than disinformation, instead of just, we're reporting the truth. That used to be the goal of journalism, and so many people have forgotten that, and it's a real sad state of affairs. But I think the most healthy thing for legacy media is that we need to let it die. We need to make sure that these businesses are holding themselves accountable. They're not just propped up, and they need to run their business like every other Canadian has to run their small business. They have to make money, they have to run on a budget, and they have to put out a product that people will consume.
Tanya, let me ask you, do you think, since we're on the topic of the CBC, and I think we're all in agreement that the CBC needs to be defunded, do you think that there is a role for a public broadcaster in Canada to tell stories and to reach Canadians that with stories that are just not going to be told by the private news industry? We know we're in the industry, right? We know that there are stories that just do not play well, that don't get clicks, but they matter to some Canadians and they matter to certain people. Do you think there's a role for a public broadcaster, or has the CBC just kind of soured that idea for Canadians? What do you think?
You know, I'm honestly not sure anymore. Maybe before starting Northern Perspective, I'd say, yes, absolutely. But now I really don't know. I mean, the thing about public broadcasters is that they have a huge reach because they're so large, because they're government funded. I mean, for Ryan and I, for example, we're based out of Hamilton. Sometimes we're able to go and spend a night in Ottawa and get an interview or do a story there. But most of the time we're limited to what's happening in Hamilton, what's happening in a drivable distance around Hamilton, and kind of what we're finding on the internet. Now, are we able to go up to, say, Nunavut and cover some news there? No, unfortunately, we're not. So I think that a public broadcaster has the ability to do that because they have the funding. However, I'm also wondering if without a public broadcaster, if that would open up a market to more individuals across Canada who would say, you know what, I'm going to get my cell phone and I'm going to record something and I'm going to put it on YouTube and I'm going to see what happens. And maybe it takes off.
Well, and you know, the one thing that the CBC is supposed to do, and it's on that vein that you were talking about, Harrison, is they're supposed to have presence in more rural and remote communities to be able to bring news from those communities into the limelight, to tell those stories. The challenge is because the CBC has completely lost all focus and lost all trust in Canadians, they can't be trusted to reliably do that. So is there some sort of way for, you know, incentives to do that? I don't know. Is there a way that you can even structure, you know, media where it has mandates on what it's supposed to report on. So the objectivity, is there. I don't know. Should the government be funding a news organization that doesn't report on the federal government? Maybe that's a way to do it, so they're non-biased, and then the provincial governments do the same. I don't know. There's many different ways that it can be done, but I think however it goes, the government and the media industry needs to recognize that we're in the 21st century. The world has changed, and they need to let go of this dinosaur view of what broadcasting is and what the news is. And in my opinion, they need to just start over and recognize what the landscape is and give the customers what they want. And what they want is truth.
Right. And you know, look at the United States. Think about the outsized role that the CBC has in Canadian broadcasting and Canadian media compared to PBS in the United States. That's the public broadcaster down there, but they don't scratch the surface of what the private broadcasters can do. And of course, the market is different, but they have set it up in a way that the public broadcaster is not dominating the media landscape as it does in Canada. And the UK is the same. The BBC dominates that media landscape, and the private players, they're big, but they're just not at the same level. You know, it's funny, the CBC was created by a conservative. It was a conservative government creation as a vehicle to advance Canadian identity and as a tool of Canadian nationalism, to give Canadians an idea of who they are, what it means to be a Canadian, and to tell stories that make Canadians feel more united. And I can't think of, the CBC hasn't reported on one story that has accomplished any of those three objectives. They haven't been able to do that at all. They do not make me feel proud to be a Canadian. They don't, in my opinion, tell stories of Canadians that should be heard. And they just don't accomplish what they, I think, were meant to accomplish. And so maybe there is a place for a public broadcaster, but at the same time, maybe there isn't. And that's going to, well, I think, you know what? We're going to see what's going to happen, because if Pierre Poilievre follows through, it doesn't look as though we're going to have a CBC, or if we do, it's going to be very small in the future, and maybe it'll happen this year. You know, we'll leave it there. We'll let everyone get back to enjoying their Christmas holidays. We wanted to make sure we highlighted some of the worst fake news examples of the year. Let us know in the comments what you think. Do you think there's a role for a public broadcaster in this country? If it's not the CBC, what could it be? Let us know in the comments. Until 2 weeks, 2 weeks time. We'll see you not next week, but we'll see you the week after that. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you all in 2 weeks.